This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. Sunday marked the somber milestone of 500,000 deaths globally from COVID-19. In fact, that figure is now more than 501,000. It's a little more than a quarter of that in the United States. We're also looking at more than 10.1 million confirmed infections globally and more than 2.5 million in the U.S. The milestones come as many hard-hit countries ease their lockdown measures while making extensive alterations to the ways people live and work. North America, Latin America, and Europe each account for around 25% of cases, while Asia and the Middle East have around 11% and 9% respectively. That is according to a Reuters tally, which uses government reports. And just two countries account for over a third of all new cases over the past week. That's India and Brazil. They're both battling outbreaks of over 10,000 new cases a day. Brazil has the third highest number of cases globally, and some researchers say the death toll in Latin America alone could rise over 380,000 by October. Some countries are also experiencing a resurgence in infections, leading authorities to partially reinstate lockdown measures in what experts say could be a recurring pattern in the coming months and into 2021. And that is true in the United States, where several states at the center of the new surge in infections have taken steps back from efforts to ease restrictions on businesses. British Interior Minister Priti Patel spoke out against recent mass gatherings, which break social distancing measures imposed to counter coronavirus. Speaking to BBC's Andrew Marr, she cited demonstrations, illegal street parties, and Liverpool fans celebrating their team's Premier League title. This is VOA News. Australia's second most populous state said on Monday that it is considering reimposing social distancing restrictions after the country reported its biggest one-day rise in new coronavirus infections in more than 2 months. While many states and territories have yet to report their latest numbers, Victoria said it detected 75 cases within a 24-hour period, enough to make it Australia's biggest daily outbreak since April 11th. The growing figures have stoked fears of a second wave in Australia after several weeks of fewer than 20 new cases a day. As cases have mounted, Victoria has embarked on a massive testing pattern, and the state's chief health officer said the state is considering reimposing social distancing restrictions. In May, Victoria, home to more than 6 million people, began lifting restrictions imposed a month earlier to slow the spread of the virus. It has pledged to remove the bulk of restrictions by the end of July. The Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, has called on states to continue easing restrictions, insisting the country's economy cannot remain idled. With just over 4 months to go before Election Day, U.S. President Donald Trump is escalating his efforts to delegitimize that vote. He's made the claim that 2020 will be the most corrupt election in the history of the country. Mr. Trump spent much of 2016 going after the very process that ultimately put him in the White House. Some historians say that such rhetoric from a sitting president is unprecedented, and election experts have repeatedly discredited the president's claims about widespread fraud in the mail-in voting process. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says that she is asking for a report to Congress after newspapers cited U.S. intelligence from months ago that a Russian military intelligence unit secretly offered bounties to Taliban-linked militants for killing American troops in Afghanistan. The New York Times also reported that the White House has yet to authorize any response. President Trump denies being briefed. Pelosi tells ABC's This Week that she has not been informed about the reported bounty. She says this is as bad as it gets, and yet Mr. Trump won't confront Russia. A senior administration official says the White House plans to brief select members of Congress on Monday. A senior U.S. official says Iran would become the arms dealer of choice for terrorists if a U.N. weapons embargo is allowed to expire. Brian Hook, the U.S. Special Representative for Iran, told the Associated Press during a visit to the United Arab Emirates that the world should ignore Iran's threat of retaliation in response to any extension of the embargo. He said such a response amounts to intimidation, which he called a mafia tactic. The current U.N. embargo on Iran is set to expire in October. It was imposed in 2010. Find more at voanews.com. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, June 29th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Malawi's new president declares war on corruption.
We all know, including Chakwera himself, that this country deserves better. Everybody is looking forward to a corrupt-free country, and that's the challenge that is before Dr. Lazarus Chakwera and his colleague, Soros Klaus Chilima.
Kenya contemplates reopening its economy amid rising COVID-19 cases. Lesotho's new cabinet ministers will sign assets declaration today, Monday. Cameroon's food traders suffer pandemic closure but poor benefits. And is President Tshisekedi's ruling coalition in trouble following the arrest of the justice minister?
We all know, including Chakwera himself, that this country deserves better. Everybody is looking forward to a corrupt-free country, and that's the challenge that is before Dr. Lazarus Chakwera and his colleague, Soros Klaus Chilima.
Andre Alain Atundu is an official of former President Joseph Kabila's coalition, and Botswana's military shoots and kills a rhino poacher. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Malawi's new president, Lazarus Chakwera, whose town's coalition won a decisive victory in last Tuesday's court-order fresh presidential election, is promising to declare war on corruption. Speaking Sunday at his swearing-in, Chakwera called for a new Malawi for all Malawians, those who voted for him and those who did not vote for him. Maurice Mutale is the National Publicity Secretary of Mr. Chakwera's Malawi Congress Party. He says Chakwera's election signifies change in Malawi.
Malawians wanted change, and that change could only come if we all came together to fight a common enemy. So coming together and fighting a common enemy in the name of Tonse Alliance with all the nine parties and Timothy Mtambo of the CFT, that contributed to our victory because we did exactly what people wanted.
What would you say about the new elections commission under the leadership of Kashale? I mean, how do you compare it to previous election commission in the way it conducted the election?
Malawians have saluted Dr. Kashale already for the marvelous work that he has done together with his commissioners within a limited time space. And this can only be attributed to his kind of leadership and his dedication as contrasted to Jenny Ansah, the previous chair, who was even asking for more days than the 23 June that was proposed by the same commission. So we are looking forward to credible elections in future because he has set a standard and he has shown that things are possible as long as there's good leadership at the helm of a commission.
How would a President Chakwera's administration be different from former President Mutharika?
Dr. Lazarus Chakwera has always said, and he has been joined by his colleague, Dr. Saulos Klaus Chilima, that a leader must be a servant and not a master. You must not rule, but you must serve. And you must make sure that you are serving a country that is united. You are serving a country that is prospering together, not having to select a few people that will prosper.
The Catholic Bishops' Conference said in a statement that it hopes that the Chakwera government and all those who made his election possible will live up to their promise to fight corruption and bring about the rule of law. Is the president ready for that?
The president is more than ready because we all know, including Chakwera himself, that this country deserves better. That is why Malawians are expecting a lot from Dr. Chakwera. Everybody in this country hates corruption, and Malawians know how corruption has adversely affected the delivery of the social services development projects in this country. So everybody is looking forward to a corrupt-free country, and that's the challenge that is before Dr. Lazarus Chakwera and his colleague, Soros Klaus Chilima.
Maurice Mutale is the National Publicity Secretary for the Malawi Congress Party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. An official in former Democratic Republic of Congo, President Joseph Kabila's ruling coalition, says it is in President Felix Tshisekedi's interest to maintain the coalition between the FCC and Mr. Tshisekedi's Catch coalition. Andre Alain Atundo says a breakup of the two could spell trouble for Mr. Tshisekedi because it would mean going from a coalition to cohabitation. This comes after Justice Minister Celestine Tunda was arrested briefly Saturday and released. Tunda, a member of Kabila's PPRD party, has had disagreement with President Tshisekedi over her proposal to give the Justice Ministry more control over criminal prosecutions. On Sunday, Prime Minister Sylvester Ilunga threatened to resign over the matter. Andre Alain Atundo says it was a mistake to arrest Justice Minister Tunda.
At the end of the day, I can say that it was a very disturbing misunderstanding because there was no matter to arrest the Vice Premier Minister and Minister of Justice, Mr. Tunda. And unfortunately, this gives reason to people who are afraid of coming regime of judges, you know, of attorney. So attorney will govern the country instead of the politicians.
President Tshisekedi's party and that of former President Kabila came into a coalition. Now, is the coalition strong or there is problem in the coalition?
I can say the coalition is shaked because of these several incidents. But I think the best interest of President Tshisekedi is to maintain the coalition strong, because the aftermath of the end of a coalition, I can say, will be terrible for he and Cash, because it means if we go from coalition to cohabitation, I can say coalition is like a marriage with Commonwealth, and cohabitation is like marriage with separate worlds. So he will lose a lot of. It means all the members of government from Cash, all the managers from Cash in the national societies, all the members of Cash in the bureau or office of the parliament had to go. If they go, I think President will have a lot of people frustrated and he will not able to give satisfaction to all of them. And it will be a lot of trouble in his coalition Cash than in the FCC.
I asked that question because I'm looking at the quote from Mr. Ramazani. He says, if they no longer want the coalition, we want to go directly towards cohabitation. And we understand that Mr. Ramazani was close to the Justice Minister. What's happening?
No, the Justice Minister is a member of PPRD. And these words of Mr. Ramazani was a speech in front of the militants. And he said what you say. If they want no longer this coalition, let's go to cohabitation. It will be easier. He wants really Cash say openly that they want to continue or they will continue with us. If they will continue, they have to be consequent to respect the rules.
Andre Alain Atundu is an official of former DRC President Joseph Kabila's party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Kinshasa. Kenya is contemplating reopening its economy despite a surge in COVID-19 cases. President Uhuru Kenyatta says his administration may open up the inter-county lockdown as well as allow domestic flights to operate as the country monitors the situation. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, ordinary Kenyans also want the economy to reopen, as most of them complain about economic challenges that they are facing.
Kenyans are struggling as most companies lay off workers due to economic hard times that has been as a result of COVID-19 pandemic. As the COVID-19 cases surge, recording 259 in the last 24 hours, being the highest in East African region, President Uhuru Kenyatta is contemplating on reopening up the economy with few trials among them allowing operation of domestic flights in the country.
We are going to be starting domestic flights, and this is what we're going to use as our trial over the, let's say, next couple of days, because we are opening up the lockdown that we have had between inter-county lockdown. And ultimately, I think that's what's going to set the pace for getting a date for us to open up now once again to international flights.
Kenya's Ministry of Health is blaming Kenyans of not taking into consideration measures put in place to contain the spread of the virus. However, Kenyans seem to ignore, as most politicians, including President Uhuru Kenyatta, are holding meetings and moving from county to county despite the ban by the ministry. Chief Administrative Secretary, Ministry of Health, Mercy Mwangangi, said that county governments should enhance their level of COVID-19 management as numbers are on the rise.
County governments need to deploy rapid response teams. These teams need to be agile and they need to be able to be supported to ensure that they can trace appropriately. And of course, treatment facilities need to be readied in terms of being able to receive any sick or severe patients. We would like to continue urging each and every one of us to continue again seriously observing all the containment measures. Today, we have tested 2,718 samples, out of which 259 people have tested positive for the virus.
Despite the increased numbers and Kenyans already struggling, most of them want the economy reopened so they can look for jobs, as most Kenyans face massive layoff and pay cuts. Dan Kanekisa is a Kenyan working in Dubai, United Arab Emirates as a teacher, recently evacuated back home with no job. He says the school he works for can't pay them anymore and wants the economy reopened and look for opportunities elsewhere.
Despite the fact that we still have no full control over this, but I think there is need for the government to open up the economy, because if you look at the private sector for that matter, a lot of jobs, people are really struggling. The government should actually take that as a matter of urgency, because for sure people are suffering outside here.
Kenya is leading in COVID-19 cases in Eastern Africa region, as countries like Uganda and Rwanda record few cases and zero deaths. As by yesterday, Sunday, Kenya's COVID-19 cases increased to 6,070 after 259 tested positive for the virus in the last 24 hours. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Monday, June 29th. New cabinet ministers in Lesotho will begin signing assets declarations today, Monday. Newly appointed Prime Minister Moketsi Majoro last week gave ministers and other senior government officials 14 days to declare their assets as part of his efforts to fight corruption. Motole Matsoisa is the national spokesperson of the All Basotho Convention ABC Party, the biggest party in Lesotho's current ruling coalition.
The decision of the cabinet is that all the ministers must have shown cause, case to declare the assets. The decision of the cabinet in relation to manage the acquisition of assets by the cabinet ministers while they are in power, and the same acquisition of assets or declaration will also be extended to civil servants, especially those who are holding the statutory positions in government.
The new prime minister took over from former Prime Minister Thomas Thabane. There were concerns of corruption under Prime Minister Thabane. Is the new prime minister demanding these declarations because of concern about corruption?
No, actually, this was the previous initiative. It was not just implemented. Therefore, for now, because there were other mechanisms and proposals which were put in place to combat the corruption, hence that's why the two coalition partners have agreed that no, all the MPs and the ministers will have to declare their assets.
What can you tell us about defections from the All Basotho Congress Party? Their members defecting to other political parties. What can you tell us?
No, actually, there are people who were ministers in the Tom Thabane's administration. Now that after the new coalition has taken place, they wanted to claim that no, this is not a new government or arrangement, it is a continuous of the administration of Tom Thabane. Therefore, they think that they are entitled to the ministerial positions. It's not a matter of policy or anything.
Is it also my understanding that the former First Lady, Masaya Thabane, is she going to court on Monday? Is that my understanding?
Yes, actually, tomorrow after at 2:30, we are expecting the judge to deliver the judgment in relation to whether she will be eligible for bail or not.
Montoli Masotsa is the national spokesperson for the All Basotho Convention ABC Party, the biggest party in Lesotho's current ruling coalition. He was speaking with us from the capital, Maseru. Cameroon says the temporary closure of most restaurants and border trade during the COVID-19 pandemic has dropped food prices by up to 70%. While food sellers are suffering the lost income, cheaper prices have helped some of Cameroon's poorest to cope during the economic disruption. Moki Edwin Kizika reports from Yaoundé.
After the COVID-19 pandemic forced restaurants to close in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, a new way of business emerged to sell the surplus of cheap food. Trucks that used to deliver large quantities of food to the city's eateries and hotels now go from street to street, selling fruit, vegetables, and chicken to the general public. But food distributors like Christopher Nanze say the pandemic is destroying their business. He says his wholesale buyers have dried up with restaurant closure and the banning of large gatherings and border trade. Nanze says they are suffering because vegetable, meat and chicken sellers no longer have access to markets in Nigeria, Gabon and Equatorial Guinea since the neighboring countries sealed their borders to stop the spread of COVID-19. He says food prices have decreased sharply. Nanze says the price of a 20-liter bucket of fresh tomatoes has dropped from $15 to only $4, while the price of a chicken that weighs 1.5 to 2 kilograms has fallen from $10 to about $3 to $4. But in poor neighborhoods where day laborers and laid-off workers have been struggling during the pandemic, the cheap food is a blessing. Among the buyers is 39-year-old unemployed single mother of two, Amina Awa. She says it is the first time in her life that she can afford to buy a few meals of meat per week for her children. She says she is very happy that food is now very cheap and poor Cameroonians like her can add chicken to their diet. Awa says she does not like seeing people infected and dying from COVID-19, but she wishes for prices to remain low so that the poor can also eat well. But as the poor like Awa express joy, Cameroon's farmers trade unions have called on the government to assist them. The Cameroon Poultry Trade Union's Joseph Chom says the fall in food prices means members are unable to repay their loans. He says farmers are also discouraged from producing, and if no government assistance comes soon, Cameroon may face a food shortage.
La crise sanitaire actuelle est un appel divin.
Chom says the COVID-19 crisis has exposed Cameroon's fragile economy. If the government does not give financial assistance to farmers and food sellers, he says their businesses will crumble. Chom says banks that gave out loans to traders should renegotiate the terms because so many people cannot afford to pay them back. Cameroon's Minister of Finance, Louis-Paul Motase, says the government is preparing a rescue plan for farmers. He says the government plans to give farmers tax breaks and subsidies to ensure production.
Pour bien comprendre l'effort que je dis gigantesque du chef de l'État.
Motase says the government and Cameroon's President Paul Biya are very much aware of the difficulties that traders are going through. He says they are doing everything possible to assist them. Although the government is already losing close to $2 billion in revenue due to COVID-19, says Motase, Biya has removed taxes for foodstuffs. Motase says the government has vowed not to allow the possibility of any food shortages. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Botswana's military says a rhino poaching suspect was killed last Wednesday during the exchange of fire. Mkundise Dube has details from Habaroni.
Botswana Defense Force Major Mabikwa Mabikwa said poachers are using sophisticated weapons of war and communication equipment. He says the army is up to the challenge. President Mokgweetsi Masisi recently said the military will not hesitate to shoot poachers.
Poachers are sufficiently radicalized to kill, so they're dangerous. We put an army in place to defend this country, so any intruder is an enemy. And unfortunately, as with any war, there are casualties.
The army says it has killed 19 suspected rhinoceros poachers since last year, while one soldier lost his life during an exchange in April. Poachers mostly target a rhino, with 56 of the endangered animals killed in the past 2 years. The government recently decided to dehorn all the rhinos and relocate them to secure private locations. Department of Wildlife and National Parks Principal Veterinary Officer Marty Rubin said in addition to dehorning, anti-poaching efforts would be intensified.
We expect to see the result. It is meant to disincentivize. This does not in any way replace any of our anti-poaching strategies that we put in place. In fact, we actually up the our anti-poaching operations and augment them further to make sure that any perpetrators that come in on, they are actually brought to book.
The Okavango Delta is wet and challenging to navigate, with some areas inaccessible by road. Most poachers cross over from neighboring countries. Nkondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone.
Africa Sports, and here is something. Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the head of the Egyptian Football Association's medical committee, Mohamed Sultan, confirming that they have found 19 coronavirus positive cases in the league. The Egyptian Football Association had stressed that all players must take the PCR test twice, while also explaining that positive results will be disclosed privately in order to respect the player's privacy. Elsewhere in South Africa, there have been 7 positive tests for coronavirus at 4 clubs as the South African Premiership, the richest in Africa, prepares to restart. CAF Executive Committee member Hani Aburida has revealed that the Confederation of African Football is expected to announce big decisions over the future of all the continental competitions, including the 2021 African Cup of Nations and the Champions League amid the coronavirus pandemic. The Nations Cup is scheduled to start on the 9th of January in Cameroon, but the fate of the continental tournament remains unclear, given that the CAF has postponed 3 rounds of qualifiers until further notice. Staying with football news, Liberian international soccer player Anthony Snoti Lafor says acts of racism in sports should be condemned at all levels. Anthony Snoti, who plays for Mamelodi Sundowns in South Africa, tells my colleague James Batty he's never experienced racism since he started playing in South Africa, despite the issues between black and white South Africans.
Like what you just said about the Black Lives Matter, for me, I pay attention to that because at the end of the day, racism should stop, especially in sports. It's not something that is good. So I think, you know, South Africa is a black and white country, right? But then in South Africa, when it comes to football, I have never seen that. I think the South African supporters, they are good. So for me, these are very much focused, and I'm also willing to help my brothers and sisters within and around the world.
The Uganda Olympic Committee has moved to restructure the national team selection process, which has been a source of contention in the recent past. The new selection process will be adopted by Sports Federation and will be based on merit. William Blake, president of the Ugandan Olympic Federation, says the process will allow for better governance in athletes' selection in Uganda. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, June 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, hoping that you will have a great week.